Welcome to Local Insights, the podcast where we explore groundbreaking ideas and the transformative impact of technology on businesses in the Middle East. I'm Ramia Faraj. Today, we have a powerhouse panel to discuss one of the most critical topics shaping industries globally, the evolving landscape of digital transformation and customer experience strategies. Our discussion will dive into the challenges CXOs face, including navigating cloud financial operations as cloud adoption scales and complexity grows. Joining me are three distinguished leaders driving innovation across their sectors. Saket Seth is Group Chief Technology and Data Officer of RackBank, a visionary in financial technology. Osama El-Samadoni is General Manager of GBM Dubai, a pioneer in digital transformation solutions. And Sabine Hull is CTO of IBM in the MEA region, an expert in leveraging hybrid cloud and AI for business advantage. Welcome and thank you so much for being here today. I want to start by asking you, if you could implement one transformative technology in every organization across the Middle East tomorrow, what would it be and why? Sabine.
So it's definitely GenAI. McKinsey predicts that GenAI will add $4.4 trillion to the annual corporate gross profit globally. And I think that's really where we need to look at how we can take this advantage and make it real. And if we look at how can we gain from GenAI, it's all around productivity. And there are different areas where we can engage with GenAI in our organizations. So I would like to highlight three of them. So one is around IT automation. So this is really how can I run my IT operations much more efficiently. And this goes all the way from sustainability, from security, from, you know, predicting how much resources I need to implement my new solutions, to application development with code assistance. How do I increase productivity for developers so they don't need to know every language? They can actually generate code. They can document the code they are using or they need to modernize. And so there is a lot of benefit. The one I would like to look at more is around virtual assistants. I think we all have seen the early stages of chatbots, which were very like rather frustrating at some point, you know, because you ask a question, you don't get the right answer and you still end up with a customer service agent and then you have to start over again. Versus today, you really can make a difference. You can automate a lot of repetitive tasks and serve your clients much better. So they are much more satisfied. They're always on, 7 times 24 hours. Customers can actually access those virtual assistants when they need to do simple tasks. And then also to open new bank accounts, to check balances, get new loans, etc. So you reach a much larger customer base. You can collect a lot more data efficiently, which also helps you then with GenAI to serve your clients better. And so overall, the productivity gain you can get with GenAI and assistants are really great.
Efficient chatbots are something that we have needed for many years now, and $4 trillion is also a huge incentive. What are your thoughts?
I think I would just expand on that whole idea. And I would like to see AI-assisted DevSecOps being implemented.
Tell us, what are DevSecOps?
So DevSecOps is the concept of, if you look at the way software is developed in the industry, starting from, you know, the development of the code, all the way into putting that into production and operating it in production, and of course, incorporating all elements of security, for example, into that entire lifecycle. So it's setting up like a software delivery factory. And that is all automated, right from development to checking on security to actually deploying it into production. So that's DevSecOps.
Osama, what would you implement in every organization?
I would actually take on what Sabine said and regarding the IT automation part, as well as the AI assistant part, and expand it a little bit. Because right now, agentic AI became now a reality. And by saying agentic AI is taking the automations that you have in anywhere, and you infuse that with AI based on the data and the experience that the organization has, either about the customer or about the organization policies and procedures. So a next best action can be one of them, and especially in automation CX layer, which is customer engagement layer, on the back end of the assistance, it actually impacts the learning and development of the organization for its own employees and staff. And as exactly as Sabine said, it enhances productivity and effectiveness of the organization.
And Saket, you aim to really create the best possible customer experience, and your customers' expectations certainly are evolving. How would you say that RackBank is really leveraging digital transformation to redefine the customer experience and to maintain a competitive edge in a market that is very heavily saturated?
Yeah, look, I think for us, our vision is to be the digital bank with a human touch. And, you know, with that in mind, what we have been doing over the last couple of years is really delivering differentiated customer experiences, you know, making banking as frictionless as possible. Now, a lot of the times, the way it has been interpreted, digital transformation is interpreted as just automation. And people just think, okay, let me just automate this whole process end to end and that's done. But, you know, what that completely misses out is those friction points in the process still. So what if I get stuck, right? What if while I'm trying to open an account or I'm trying to do a transaction, I get stuck? Do I have the ways and means to easily figure out what's going on and be able to still complete my transaction? And sometimes that requires a human to sort of come into the loop. Right. And so those are the kind of experiences that we're trying to build. So customer experience delivered through beautifully orchestrated technology with the right touch points so that we can make the interventions as required. And it's all about data. You know, data is ultimately what we use to determine when to intervene and when not to intervene.
It's really reassuring to know that the human touch is still absolutely required in these situations.
No doubt
about it. And I know that you have some examples of really innovative CX strategies that have impacted customer loyalty and satisfaction metrics. Share with us some of those examples, if you would.
Well, there are several examples that we've seen recently. For example, earlier this year, we launched digital account opening for our SME customers. And, so that allowed us to be able to get our customers to simply through the app, open an account, submitting all of the required documentation, etc. Now, typically this process can take 2 to 3 weeks, but through this automation, we were able to cut that time down to less than 2 days in some cases.
That's incredible, with KYC and all of the other requirements.
All inclusive, exactly. And as a result of that, we suddenly saw a marked uptick in the number of accounts we were able to open on a monthly basis. And, again, data-driven insights, we're proud to say that we very quickly rose up to being the bank that opens like the second highest number of business banking accounts in a month.
When you offer this level of efficiency, certainly you're going to have new and more customers. So that's wonderful.
Absolutely. And more engaged customers, which is very important as well.
Absolutely. Who are actually taking control of their own account openings and operations. So it's really remarkable what you've done there. Sabine, I know that IBM is really a key player in digital transformation. How do you see organizations balancing CX innovation with operational efficiency? What's the key here?
So I think, digital transformation nowadays is really very much driven by the business. You know, if you look at the CEOs globally, they expect that digital transformation actually not just maintains its pace, but it's also accelerating. And this is a challenge to the technical leaders, to the IT organizations. We recently had a technical leader study for the Middle East, and 50% of the CTOs we interviewed said, you know, they are struggling to balance between growth and productivity. And I see there are like three areas, and they are not necessarily all technical, okay? So the first one, and, you know, I speak for myself, but also a lot of the CTOs I speak to, is the conversation has changed. You know, on one hand, we need to have a decision-making position at the table with the board to say we are actively influencing where technology heads and how it can benefit. And for this, we really need to create allyships and alliances. You know, so for me, the first one is the CFO. Okay, the technical leader needs to be the best friend with the CFO. When you want to introduce new technologies and you to innovate, you need money. And unfortunately, there is no magic pot where money comes from. You know, you need to find money from somewhere else and shift the purpose of the money to the innovation you want to drive. So for a CFO, it's always important to be early engaged into this planning for IT projects, but also to understand what is the business value and the KPIs, how to measure success. They know if they agree to invest into something that they will actually see the benefit of it. And then in order to make this happen, you know, the conversation has turned to a business conversation. So we are not implementing technology for the sake of technology. You know, as a techie, you know, we love to take technology, we like to explore it, but that's the reality is I need to identify what are the use cases I want to implement, how complex are they, how fast can I implement them in order to show a quick return of investment. So I can actually say that the benefits of Gen AI we have talked before actually come alive for the business. And I think to build these alliances is the first part to be successful, you know, that's really critical. The second one is skills. You know, change starts within the organization. And when we talk about AI, there is a lot of fear with people, you know, that they take away my job, I won't be necessary anymore in the future. And whether this was part of the hybrid cloud transformation, but now even with, you know, AI, this has become more and more the case, you know. So we need to democratize AI and make sure that every single member in the organization understands that AI is here to augment humans, but not to replace them. Okay, as we heard in the example before. And then also to say, if we educate everybody about the benefits or the value of AI and how to adapt it and what can I do with the information I have in order to improve my processes, to increase productivity, to free time, to do more efficient, more complex work, you know, that will drive the innovation because then they will come forward and actually tell you how do you improve these processes which are serving our clients but also our internal audience. And then the third part is obviously we are here to help clients. So in 2022, I launched the IBM client engineering team here in the Middle East, which is a multidisciplinary team. So it's not just an AI engineer or a data scientist or a developer. We have a business transformation leader who can work with the business leaders to identify the use cases. I have solution architects and designers because we need to make sure the architecture is set correctly. We also need to make sure that it's appealing, you know, the client experience is at the forefront. And then I have my application developers, my AI engineers and data scientists. And this whole process takes 4 to 6 weeks where we actually co-create with our clients. We need to make sure they are part of it because at the same time, we can build skills on the whole process, how to build an AI application. And so, and then we have invested in our, you know, services organization with AI engineers, data scientists to be ready to support our clients where needed to address the skill shortage on the market. I think we always looked at, you know, fit for purpose architectures. When we look at application placement, it's no different to AI. And I think there are multiple aspects to consider. AI started off with very large language models, and I think they are great. But the cost running these large language models is incredible. And I think, especially in the Middle East, we have seen the GPU challenge, you know, and it's not a single vendor or a single client challenge. It's the availability of the GPUs in the market globally, and in particular with regulations to bring in this technology to the region. So we really need to be very precise in what we are running. And we are seeing a trend to specialize large language models. And a lot of times when I speak to clients today is, you know, the cost of running cloud environments sometimes becomes unpredictable. And the more you scale AI at scale AI for business at large, you know, this will become a very high workload. So there are considerations which we need to start thinking about when we go into AI at scale in production, away from, you know, investigating the technology, learning about the technology. And I think that's, you know, a very important point to think about.
So there are so many players bringing this to fruition. And you mentioned the important and very delicate relationship between the CFO and the CXO. How can the CXO actually determine how much ROI the CFO is going to see on his spreadsheet if the CFO makes the investment that's required?
So that's a good question. So I think, first of all, I think we do have a lot of experience globally. We have done thousands and thousands of use cases, and we collect them internally in a database. Obviously, we can't disclose always the client names, but we do studies with them in terms of their productivity gains, you know, how much, you know, how fast they can respond. If we take, for example, a call center, you know, how much faster can I respond to inquiries or complaints of clients? You know, we saw numbers like it's 10 times faster than before, because a lot of these answers are done automatically. They have a knowledge base, a database, and they can solve problems quickly, versus when it really gets to an agent, they also are supported by, you know, AI systems which suggest the right questioning, so there is no frustration on the side. That also helps with client retention, and we can measure this. So this is where we can help our clients to understand if you implement certain technologies, how you can actually be more profitable.
And these are all really aspects of data-driven decision-making. And Osama, I'd like to ask you about the role of data-driven decision-making in optimizing the CX strategies that you're offering your clients.
Thank you for asking this question, because basically this is a fulcrum point. Most of the customers, they thought that they have enough data about their customers based on the transactional data that their customers did with them. And already have a, what I call a static KYC, which is done by the banks. Right now, and I discussed that before, people are moving from a systems of record to systems of engagement. And actually the customers are demanding organization to come and join them at the customer space in order to interact properly with the organization. So here it comes the challenge. The challenge is, I have a good data about the customer, but I need actually to extract additional data about the customer from other resources, AKA social media, type of interactions, identifying the customer profiling, identifying customer behaviors, identifying customer preferences, and so on and so forth. All of this, if we augment it properly, and we had the model that can actually help me in segmenting the customer, identifying who the customer is, which what is the next best action I can do with the customer, how I can increase customer affinity, what are the programs I'm providing and the programs I'm missing to do for that, is giving a 360 view on what a CX needs to be looking like. Suddenly you find yourself moving away from the traditional CX systems, which basically was a call center or a web-based or even mobile application, going more and more into the need for expanding the data model to identify what are the customer types that we are dealing with and how to generate as much as possible a one-to-one interaction with the customer. Number two, which is very important, the need for integration and orchestration of internal processes and applications to serve the customer better, and definitely even taking the intelligent decision-making infused by AI or Gen AI based on the subject language model or small language model, as Sabine was saying, in order to actually make sure that I have an effective engagements with the customers all the time.
I think we can agree it's hard to overstate the degree to which AI and data have enhanced decision-making capabilities. And I want to ask you now about cloud adoption and the expenses that come with it. Osama, as cloud adoption grows, spending becomes more complex. What strategic considerations should executives focus on when addressing cloud financial operations challenges?
Another very good question. Basically, what I would advise any of the CIOs, CTOs, and even CFOs is to look at the what is needed to be availed in terms of resources for that application to work properly, and then decide whether its location should be on a public cloud or on a private cloud. Because right now, the development in the past 5 years on the private cloud strategy is becoming actually astronomical. You can run a mini cloud with a lot of technologies availed right now, either from even public cloud providers on-prem or done by the likes of VMware, Red Hat, and even IBM has a contribution on that as well, and decide where to do it. Why? It has been always been, for the past 5 years, we have repatriation from public cloud back again to on-prem. In the meantime, the emergence, as we said, the cost of running, for example, AI-based and GPU-hungry type of applications on AI, based on language data, large language models, it is actually the cost of running that on the cloud is astronomical. It's very high and cannot be sustained. What we need to think of is, like IBM is leading in that part really by saying, okay, let us not move away a little bit from the LLM and public cloud models. Let us look at the private models. Let's look at small language models that is based on customer data. Let us try to infer data on-prem rather than make it out. And let us make a nice moving grid type of where the application is, where the data models are, and where are the users. And I can decide based on which, where I can put the applications for maximum return and optimize it.
So in this case, how does GBM's expertise in hybrid cloud and AI help organizations manage these challenges efficiently?
Actually, in response to this, we had two, SME groups inside GBM. One of them is called the xCloud group, and the xCloud group is harnessing the cloud discussions that we have with all the public cloud providers here in the UAE, as well as what's happening on the Red Hat side, and as well as the SaaS models that we can use from IBM. So we can make sure that we can sit down with the customer and lay the land and work on where is going to be the landing zone of each. On addition of that, we have an AI squad that is actually working with the customer to make sure that we have a quicker return on investment in terms of the business case. So when we are looking at the customer on the wish list of the use cases of AI, we might find it's the readiness on the data part at the customer, it still yet need to be achieved first. So we convince the customer, okay, let's work on the data modeling. Let's work on the data pipelines. Once this is happening, let us go and work on it. Let's not invest right now in AI before the data is ready. For the things that are data ready, we challenge our customers using our own methodologies and with the integration of work that we do with our strategic technology partners. We identify for the customer what would be the return and how long the return will be. So we give it back to the customer for the customer to decide which way to go and when to do.
And as businesses increasingly rely on cloud infrastructure, I'd like to ask you the advice you would give CXOs for achieving cost efficiency while driving innovation.
So I think I can throw some light on that. So as far as cloud is concerned, cloud is just another tool in my armor, right? It's cloud is not the be-all, solve-all, right? It's an enabler. What the cloud has allowed us to do is to be able to get technology available to us on demand rather than having to do a lot of the grunt work that typically we would, you know, as a technology organization, have to do in the past. But then the flip side of that is that as it becomes easier for us to consume these technologies, it also means that the consumption can go, there can be runaway consumption, right? And without keeping good tabs and controls over how this consumption is happening, it is a huge risk that a lot of organizations run while operating in the cloud. And that's why, you know, I certainly have seen a lot of examples where, you know, the organization starts to do its cloud adoption, and then after doing it for a year or so, suddenly they start to put the brakes on it because they start to see the costs going completely, you know, uncontrolled and in the wrong direction. I think that is where there is a discipline that needs to be inculcated as part of the cloud adoption. There is something called FinOps, right, which is another term, but it's financial operations of the cloud, where the good news about the cloud is that you are paying per use, and it's very easy for you to monitor what kind of consumption is happening, because a lot of these cloud providers will provide you with real-time dashboards that tells you how much of this resource you're using, just pretty much like using electricity, right? You can find out how much is my meter showing, how much consumption am I doing? You can do it on a minute-by-minute, day-by-day basis. And if you have that discipline within the organization to track this consumption, then you will be able to keep a control on it. You will be able to bring in the right optimizations so that you are not overspending. You're still able to keep within the so-called business case. Because end of the day, when I'm going to the cloud, I'm going there for a specific ROI. And if the cost of what I'm investing in it actually really, really goes very high, then that's completely going to beat the ROI case. And what that then also does is that, you know, if that happens, you risk losing your stakeholders completely, because then they will have no faith in cloud. And all of a sudden, cloud becomes the bad thing in this whole equation, when actually cloud is just an enabler. So FinOps becomes a critical component of what we do. So at RackBank, for instance, you know, we are doing things across multiple cloud environments, right? So whether it is Azure or AWS or private cloud or other SaaS-based services, we're using a combination of all of these things, you know, what's called the hybrid cloud. And therefore, we need to have the capability of monitoring our usage on each of these components so that we can keep it under tabs.
But why would any organization not have the discipline to monitor their consumption?
Because I think it's teething issues, right? So when you're starting off with something, usually you will not have... There are two things that change when it comes to cloud, right? So A, it's you're working on new rails. And because you're working on new rails, you do not have the wherewithal in terms of the discipline to monitor, the dashboards that you need to look at. The organizational discipline has to be developed. The tooling has to be there. And the second aspect of it is that moving from a traditional data center, which is operating on premises, to operating in the cloud is a paradigm shift. You need to really start moving away from thinking of this as a one-time investment that I make, which is, you know, capital expenses. I make this investment, and then over 5 years, I will depreciate it. That's kind of like what you do with a car, right? You purchase a car, and then your car depreciates over a period of time. Now, convert that into the Uber model, right? Where I am renting the services of a car and a driver at the same time, and I'm only paying for what I'm using. So that mindset shift in an organization becomes a very key thing to happen to enable that kind of thinking on controlling the cloud operation costs.
And certainly the benefits of hybrid cloud, from increased scalability to reduce costs, ultimately build a strong case, regardless of whether companies are monitoring effectively their consumption.
And I think on that, you know, one, I think it's a misunderstanding to think that hybrid cloud is not so much about cost reduction. To me, that is a potential benefit, but the real benefit of going to cloud is agility. It is your ability to be able to respond to market conditions quickly, to be able to launch new products a lot quicker, which then does translate to cost savings, But if you always, if you lead cloud adoption through simply cost savings, I think you're going to get disappointed very quickly.
Osama, I'd like to talk to you about collaboration. How are partnerships between banks, technology providers like GBM, and innovators like IBM really shaping the future of cloud solutions?
Perfect question. We envision our relationship with our customers as strategic partner to the customer, not only a supplier. And it is a continuous efforts that we do with the customer in terms of making sure that the customer is aware of what happens, what are the technology changes happening. We do on quarterly and biannually basis a lot of activities with the customer in that regard. The other one that we started off and by creating the CloudX group as well as the AI Squad group, they are going with the customer with a clean sheet of paper and telling them, okay, what are your pains? What are your plans? And how can we build a value story together? That is engaging us with our customers at the embryonic stage of the ideas, which is a lovely place to be in, because this is where each one of our strategic technology partners can actually come and put their value statement. This is what we can do with that dream. And the customer can have built in the business case, whatever elements we need to go to the CFOs and the CXOs on how to approve the business case, because it's starting from the dream part. And we can take it step further, smaller steps, till we reach the full 9 yard of what the business case is all about. And we are comfortable and can stand behind the solution that we created, because actually it was a collaborative work between GBM, technology partner, innovation partner like IBM, as well as our customers are engaged from day one.
So it's a very comprehensive solution. I would like the audience to really benefit from your strategic insight. Saket, from your vantage point at RackBank, what do you see as the biggest strategic challenges for CXOs navigating digital transformation today?
I think the biggest challenge is, driving transformation in an organization today is like changing the engines of a flying plane while it's still in flight. So bringing in that level of wholesale change into an organization that has to continue to run, I think that becomes a combination of there's a method to it, but there's also an art to it. And understanding that and cracking that code is ultimately what defines the difference between failure and success.
And Osama, I'd also like to gain from your strategic insights and GBM's expertise in digital solutions. How can CXOs better align their technology investments with long-term business goals?
Okay, to do that in a layman term, let us think of a full cycle. And in the middle of the cycle, there is the value story. And the value story needs to be by going to the stakeholders, not the IT only, the stakeholders of the business, and try to explore with them their pains, their plans, their challenges, and their aspirations. And then we identify out of that story what IT can do as enabler. Cloud is enabler, AI is an enabler. Every of these tools that we've been discussing for the past period is actually tools or enablers. And then we look at these enablers and say, okay, what these enablers can do to solve some or all of these business outcomes or the business frame of the things that needs to be done. Once we do that, we can go back to the stakeholders and say, okay, here is how you can build your digital margin. And this is an important aspect of the thinking, because if I say I'm doing nothing, I will keep all the technologies as is, I'll not invest anything, most of probably you'll end up spending the same budget. But on the back end of that, you're going to lose on the digital margin because somebody else will invest and will be providing something better than you. Because right now the time between the time to value or the time to market is being compressed by using all these tools, the cloud, the AI, the data analytics, and so on and so forth. So we're trying to keep the customer abreast on this is the value story that we can help you achieve, both us and your IT team. And number two is, this is the digital margin that you need to build in order to stay competitive in the market. And then you identify what are the key use cases that can be done on a quick win strategy. It's not on, let us go and boil oceans together, back to what Saqer had been saying. I cannot go for a wholesale approach. So I have to go with a quick win type of escalating model at delivering every time a value. And once you do the value, you need to go and verify the value to the same stakeholders so they can still give you support to continue your journey. That's our approach to this.
It's notable that you will invest the same amount of money but not reap the rewards of investing in the new technology. And Sabine, I'd also like to hear your insights. As the digital landscape evolves, what emerging technologies do you believe CXOs must really prioritize to stay ahead of the curve?
Okay, so this is my favorite topic. It's all about future technologies, and IBM Research releases on a regular basis the technologies they are going to look forward and what's the roadmap around. So there are two areas I want to highlight. So one is agentic AI and the other one is quantum computing. So when it comes to agentic AI, which is clearly the new buzzword in the world of AI, think of autonomous AI systems, all right? And what it basically does, and it's also known if you come across LLM agents, it's the same as agentic AI, is think of an AI system, which is basically a large language model, but it has access to tools. And these tools can be other agents or virtual assistants, can be applications, can be websites they have access to, or simple tools like just to do calculations, for example. And what an agentic AI system does basically is it can reason, it can act, and it can reflect. And that makes it unique because as this processes requests, it actually learns to serve you in the future better. So think about it, you have one entry point, you might have access to a lot of different systems, applications. The second part is quantum computing. You know, when we talked about, you know, LLMs require a lot of compute power to generate, whether it's GPUs and so on. And we're reaching the boundaries to actually be able to build them in time. And quantum can really help with that. So IBM has released a quantum roadmap in 2019. Today we are at 156 qubits. So we have the largest quantum computers in the world. So we are leading in the research. We also provide access to anybody who is interested to learn quantum through the quantum network. And we also give developers access to a quiz kit, which is basically a developer kit, to make sure we are building up the skills as we speak. So when quantum becomes a commodity and people can access it, it's actually there. And it really can help to solve these problems which hit the computing power limits today in the future. But this is only one aspect to it. You know, at the other hand, we also need to be quantum ready, because with this extra compute power, there will be also good and bad people. There will be hackers who start breaking the current cryptography. So IBM also works with NAIST in the US. We have actually defined two of the three post-quantum cryptographic standards already. We have made our servers and storage systems quantum safe, and we have a whole consulting arm in quantum safe security, which can help our clients to get ready for the era where, you know, people say it's 5 to 10 years. If you talk to the quantum experts and the cybersecurity experts, they say maybe 2 to 3 years somebody will break in. So I think it's really something you need to keep an eye on to make sure that your data center is ready for quantum computing.
Really profound technologies. And do you believe we were generative AI ready?
I would say half and half, you know. I think we love the better customer experience we talked about, you know, but I think every change also creates some fears. And this is where we as humans need to come together to make sure that we democratize AI and everybody has a good and solid understanding how to use that in an ethical way.
Okay, before we wrap up, I would like to hear from each of you on your advice for CXOs who are navigating digital transformation right now. Osama.
Well, basically, he needs to, any of the CXOs needs to look at the potential as well as the expected return from in the infrastructure part of our three technologies, basically security. And I started off with it back to what Sabina just said, AI and data in one block and hybrid cloud on a third block. This is from an infrastructure perspective. Things to watch as well on the other one in the app modernization, as well as the low code, no code type of code generation, which might help in the DevSecOps, or we look for a really AI infused piece of a code generator that actually allows checking on the code before releasing it. But definitely, if I want to give any sort of advice to CXOs, please sit down your CTO. He has too many ideas, and he needs to understand your ideas and what are the aspirations of the organization to the future. The whole idea, and back to what Sabine said, and that's why I believe Sabine said 50-50, is the AI will enhance when we adapt more to it. And we will adapt more to it when we identify a real use cases that have a good business outcome return to the organizations. So it's actually, it's a closed loop. No development can happen in AI without additional fresh use cases that actually coming from the actual market into the AI thing. We need to solve this. Somebody needs to look at this.
Saket, your advice to CXOs?
So my advice to CXOs would be, it is all about delivering incremental changes. It's very easy to get distracted by the amount of change that is happening in technology, and in the here and now, get very excited about the new tools that are becoming available. But like I said, you still have to make sure that your current business is running smoothly, and then how are you able to disrupt that business in a constructive way, so that you are still able to serve your customers well. So my advice there would be, for instance, at RackBank, what we're doing is we are using generative AI, but we are using it for very specific, meaningful use cases where we have defined what the benefit case is. And we are also then tracking the data that tells us whether the benefits are being delivered or not. We are running a series of very quick and fast experiments. And as a result of that, the experiments that are yielding the better outcomes, those are the ones that we are then productionizing and taking it to our customers or to our internal users. So I think it becomes very important to not take the eyes off the running of the ship. And, because if the ship was to ground itself, then all these new technologies, become quite a major distraction. So I would say, keep your eyes on incremental changes. Be disruptive. It does not mean that you don't be disruptive. Definitely be disruptive, because if you don't disrupt yourself, somebody else will.
Take your time. Be thoughtful about the changes you make.
Absolutely.
But do it quickly at the same time.
Exactly. Exactly.
Sabine.
So I would say my advice to CXOs is make sure you have an AI ethics policy in place, because it's very important that not just internally, but also your customers understand how you are implementing AI. And from an IBM perspective, we have three major themes. One is AI augments humans, doesn't replace it. Data belongs to the creator, and trust and transparency in everything we do. And I think this is critical, because if you're a client, for example, you want to know that the organization you deal with actually takes care of the information they get, and they are not misusing it or mistreating it, And I think with these three pillars and an AI governance and ethics board in place, it's very easy to be transparent and explain everybody what you do, how you do it, why you do things, and then the AI acceptance will go up and the implementation will be successful, and mitigating the risk that AI might be a damage, because your model goes off and does something you don't want to do, impacts your business. I think we all have seen these stories in the media from different big vendors and organizations where things just went wrong, you know, and it's in our hand to make it work right.
Absolutely. Sabine, Osama, Saket, thank you so much for joining me today. It's been a fascinating conversation.
Thank you for inviting us.
And thank you to our audience for tuning in to Local Insights brought by Forbes Middle East in partnership with GBM. Don't forget to subscribe and join us for future episodes as we continue to bring you thought leadership and industry insights. Until next time, stay inspired and keep innovating.